Hello, and welcome to season two of Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources consultant in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Ford Keast LLP, providing human resources advice and counsel to my business clients. I also support people through individual one-on-one coaching in helping with career development. I hope you will enjoy our series where we talk with ordinary, extraordinary people. We get to hear about interesting journeys. We get to talk with people about failures, successes, advice, and counsel to us as we develop our own careers. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with these people, and I hope you will enjoy listening to us. And now for some logistics. Please subscribe on YouTube, or if you're a listener, please follow me wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a chance, I hope you'll visit my website, career-resilience.com. Welcome. My guest today is Marcella Tremblay. Marcella, welcome to Career Resilience.
Thank you, Jen. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is so nice to have you here. And you have such an interesting background. And we're going to talk today about your schooling and your profession. But I'd like to just start with clarifying where you live. So where do you live in this world of ours?
So I live in Basel, and that's in Switzerland.
Okay. And how long have you lived there, approx?
Approx 20 years.
Okay. And where were you born and raised?
So I was born in London, Ontario, mm-hmm. was raised in Lambeth, Ontario, mm-hmm. and I came to Switzerland. I don't want to give away my age or anything like that, but when I was starting, let's say 30s.
Okay, so you have an accent. I mean, I think any of us listening to you right now will be picking that up. And yet you were born and raised in London and Lambeth, mm-hmm. Very Canadian. So where does this accent come from?
Well, it's funny you say that because I don't hear my accent, but I know that I have one. So when Switzerland is really interesting because it has four national languages, and I live in the German-speaking part. And so I've had to learn German, and it's really interesting because Swiss speak a different German than actually is written. So you hear German, you speak a different kind of German. I need it in everyday language for shopping. I worked in German for a few years. So I think my accent comes from that. And also, if you're a native English speaker in Europe, I think your accent tends to flatten out because you speak with people from all over. Mm-hmm. For example, the department I'm in, I think there are at least 20 nationalities. So you don't hear a lot of native English speakers in your surroundings. So I think the English tends to take on its own life and accent, obviously.
Well, it's a lovely accent that you've picked. So at work, do you work in English or German?
Yes.
So you work in English?
English.
Yeah. Okay, got it. Okay. So let's get into that because we're all about career resilience here. And I'd like to chat with you about the resilience that you had actually, not only in work and in education, but what was it like for you to move to a new country?
It was exciting, terrifying. It was really an eye-opener because I thought being Canadian, all Canadians tend to have a background that is, it can be from Europe. So some, you know, in my background at least, I had ancestors from England, Germany, France. So you somehow think you are somehow familiar with the cultures as such, so that when you come to Europe, it shouldn't be such a culture shock, but it was a total culture shock. It was very difficult because I didn't speak any German before I came here. So that was very difficult. And just some funny, strange things happened at the very beginning. So, for example, I arrived in June. My birthday is in July. And in the team where I was, so I came to do my PhD in Switzerland, I thought, okay, it's my birthday. Somebody, my PhD advisor might bring a cake, or one of the other girls in the lab might bring a cake. And they were thinking, oh, it's Marcella's birthday tomorrow. She's going to bring a cake. So we arrived on my day and there was no cake. And things like that are so funny because you cannot anticipate that that is so different, right? Mm-hmm. And we were all kind of thinking, okay, first international incident, nobody brought a cake, right?
So your PhD, what is your PhD in?
So I did a PhD in molecular and cellular biology. And that was actually quite fascinating. It was looking at lichens. I'm not sure if you know what a lichen is, but that's a symbiosis between a fungus and an algae. So actually what I did was take the fungus and the algae apart, cultured them separately, and then put them back together and tried to look at, based upon their gene expression, what was different between them when they were separate and when they came together. So it was looking at a special group of proteins and then looking at some patterns in gene expression.
And what was your thesis?
So that it was on that. It was actually looking at that and also looking at a protein family that allows them to make this wonderful three-dimensional form, all the different various kinds of forms that lichens take on. And be able to take up water, dry out, photosynthesize, feed each other, feed the fungus, the algae. Because mm-hmm. They're really fascinating, fascinating creatures, I don't want to say, but symbiosis and mm-hmm. just trying to understand that symbiosis more.
And so, Marcella, what made you decide to move in that direction? I mean, here you are in Canada, obviously getting your undergrad degree, and then what made you decide to go there?
Yeah, good question. I think I never really had a clear plan what I wanted to do, and I kind of envy people who know where they want to go, what they want to do. I was always so interested in many different things. And I actually started out, my first degree was in art, in fine arts. Ooh. And I did painting, drawing. I opened an art studio with a girlfriend. We did framing, selling paintings as well. And then I took a course in biology about trees. And I got so fascinated by that that I went back to university and did a degree in biology. And then I did my master's at McGill, and this was in plant sciences. And also really trying to understand and look at some symbiosis as well in the plant world. And when I finished my master's, my wonderful supervisor back in London, Ontario, said, you'd probably like to do a PhD. I would have a position here, or I know a professor in Switzerland who's also interested in this area in symbiosis. I could drop her a line. And she dropped her line. She said, yeah, she also had a position. And I thought, well, okay, let's think. Go back to London, Ontario, or go to Switzerland? And I thought, well, I'm up for it. I'll go to Switzerland. So my original plan was to come here, do my PhD, which would take normally 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. And you see, I'm still here. So.
Yes. Yes, that does tend to happen. I've heard exactly. People that say, I'll just go over for a year or two or three or four, and the next thing you know, they've made
20
a life
years.
There. They've made a yeah. life there. How brave was that?
Looking back, it was really brave. And I think that's probably something easier to do when you're younger and sort of more in the student mind of things. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably a little bit more challenging because the department that I ended up in hadn't really had any experience with foreign students. So they weren't really sure how much support I needed. So I had to do quite a lot of things on my own, but I made friends quickly, and I wouldn't say necessarily that it was easy, because Swiss are really wonderful in the sense that it takes them a long time to bring you in, mm-hmm. to be your friend. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they decide, yes, I want to be your friend, you have them as a friend for life. It's really an amazing commitment. I've had people, Swiss, say to me, I really like you. I'm really interested in what you're doing, but I don't have time to be your friend. Because it's crazy, right? But I remember when somebody said that to me, and I was so shocked and like upset. But then I realized it's actually really honest and true. If you don't have time to be somebody's friend, or you can't do it, and you don't have the time to do it in a proper way, it's somehow quite wonderful to be able to say that and mean that, and not just try without knowing that you can't commit to a certain mm-hmm. commitment as you wish. It's
that is really interesting.
Yeah.
And how would you compare that to Canadian culture of a similar experience?
I don't think I've ever had someone say that to me in Canada. I think what's cool about the friendship I had in Canada is that you can have friendships that are, to me, it was like intense, wonderful, and then the time moved on and then the friendship was over, but it wasn't any less. I think there's maybe a little bit more flexibility. I have friends that I've had my whole life from Canada still have close contact with. It's just different.
Yeah. And just on that, you and I share a friend, and that's our friend Lisa. And mm-hmm. that's how you and I connected. And I think she is just such a great friend that she understands friendship. So that must mean we do as well. So what resilience did you need to have getting through your PhD?
You're committed. It's problem solving. It's trying to figure something out, answer the questions that come up, have a vision where it's going to a certain extent that you can bring all the pieces together. Because the ultimate goal would be to publish your work, mm-hmm. to make sure, hopefully, that it's something that makes a contribution. I think probably my PhD was maybe a little bit more complicated because of having the cultural shock as well. To be sitting in a room with people and not understand any word that they say, because it took a long time to learn German, of course. Even though the language of science typically is English, I think in the cultural setting, to not understand was very difficult. So I spent a lot of time, I guess, in my own head, not knowing the language or having anybody that spoke it. But resilience is just, sticking with your project, a lot of failures, a lot of, just perseverance, I think, in the sense of if something doesn't work, try it again, especially in the molecular and cellular biology, learning new techniques. So I did go sometimes to different universities, different labs to understand and learn some techniques, to discuss the science with people, to go to congresses, to do the presentations.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting, I have to say.
Yeah. Was there ever a time, Marcella, when you were going through that you thought, this is too hard?
Oh, gosh, this is a few years back. I have to say yes, because I may not remember a specific moment, but I remember the feeling.
Yeah.
Yes, it was difficult because just... I think compounding it, being here alone without family, without friends, mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, Jen. I don't know how to say it. It was difficult, but of course, obviously, very satisfying. I really learned completely different things here, completely different skill sets of going to the mountains, hiking in the mountains. So, you know, you've got the intense phase of study and the teaching in the labs and things like that, but also had the opportunity. Switzerland is a small country. It's like 1/250th of the size of Canada. It's all folded up with mountains, mm-hmm. lakes, rivers. It's wonderful. And I think the overarching reaction I get from people when they ask, where are you from? And I say, from Canada, they go, why are you here? Canada is so big. You have so much space. You have so much wilderness. And I have to laugh because how much wilderness do Canadians actually go into? You know, you've got bears, you've got black flies, you've got no path. In Switzerland, it's so organized. They have maps for everywhere. They have paths for everywhere. They have signs to tell you what direction you're going in, how long it's going to take you to get there. I've never been out in nature so often as here, in the sense of going for a trek or going for a hike or a 10-day walk through the mountains. That's a major expedition and undertaking in Canada. Here it's so well organized. It's a funny question. Why would you come here?
That's really interesting. Yeah. That whole organization, we almost have too much room.
Yeah, it's too big to organize, right?
It's too big to organize. What advice would you give someone? And I know that I'm making you sort of harken back to when you were doing your PhD, but it is such a tough slog when people are going through that stage of their lives. What advice would you give someone who's sort of in the middle of it and thinking, gosh, this is so tough?
Have a backup, I would say, of somebody. I think things are maybe slightly different because I notice the difference now as well. Have that lifeline back to somebody that you can really pour your heart out into back home. And for me, that was my dad. I remember being on the phone and just crying sometimes and saying, oh, I'm so lonely. And he was there, and I think that was so important, just to have somebody to listen and understand, because on this side, it was like, you know, well, I don't really understand, because you've come here, you made the choice to come here, you should be happy. And yes, indeed, it was a fantastic opportunity. I don't deny that. And I think I would encourage anybody, if you have the opportunity to go to a different country, take the opportunity. And if you're not sure it would work for you, say, I'll try it for a year. I would say try it by stages. Give yourself a goal. I'll try it for this semester. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an easy way, if you can break it down.
Yes. Yeah.
Have your lifeline. Maybe break it down into chunks. Because things now as well, you have the bachelor is sort of universal now. So if you do 1 year here, for example, you're not going to lose it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's very similar for the PhD. What people value, and I think what is valued also on a CV, is you went to a different country, you gave it a try, even if it didn't work, you've gained valuable experience from that. Because so many of us now work in global companies, or we work in companies where you've got people from different cultures.
Yeah.
And if you've had that experience, it doesn't have to be the whole PhD. If somebody's intimidated and say they can't commit for a semester or a year, it will help you so much.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that's...
Yeah. So, Marcella, you're still there. So
yeah.
At some point, you turned the corner and decided to settle where you are.
Yeah.
What was that like? Well, how did you turn that corner?
I think if you're somewhere, at least my experience was, if you're somewhere for 2-3 years, that is kind of the corner. Because by the time you have 2-3 years under your belt, you're used to things, you've got friends, you've got your sort of places you like to go. You maybe found that place in the city where you'd like to live. For me, it was discovering the mountains and my love of mountains and hiking and mountaineering and climbing. I think all of those things sort of just, I fell in love with them. So if you don't want to stay somewhere, don't stay longer than 2 years, because it starts to get under your skin. And I can remember that feeling of, I'm at home in Canada, I'm at home in Switzerland, where is my home? Yeah. It took a long time for it to change. It took about 10 years. And I think what helped with that, and probably it goes faster with people when they have a family here.
I wanted to switch over to work. So tell us what you do for a living.
So currently I'm the publication lead in the ophthalmology department in Bayer. And you may know Bayer from Bayer Aspirins, sort of a heritage company. So the department I work in is the medical affairs department. And that is what I do is take the scientific study data and publish that. So it's published in scientific journals. So this is really looking at retinal diseases, understanding how one of the company's drugs works in that disease, and publishing the data on that.
Okay, so you're doing important work.
I like to think of it like that, because it's really important for the people who are in the studies. It's important for the patients, for the physicians. Yeah, it's really something that touches people's lives. It's really exciting because it's something it involves talking with people from around the world.
Yes.
So earlier in the week, we had an author discussion with folks from Europe, and Asia was on the call. We have ones where we have to sometimes split because we're going from US to Europe to Australia, so we can't fit everybody in one time zone call, so we sometimes have to split them. And I have to say, one of the things that's been really nice about moving to virtual communication and relying on that so heavily is to actually get to see these people from around the world and, you know, just have that sort of visual connection. And it's really lovely that we have this technology to enable us to do that, to have around-the-world discussions.
And, you know, I think what's interesting, too, about what people like you do is that, and this whole global impact of what you do, is when we listen to the news, it's all about global conflict. And yet there you are talking with people from around the world about an incredibly important and helpful topic. And really, it's encouraging to sort of realize that that's all going on and that we're all just people.
Actually, that's really nice. That's a really nice take on it. I have to agree with you. It is really lovely. And what I like as well is sometimes, you know, reading some of the scientific literature, I might see somebody's name come up and up and up again. But then to actually be on a call and get to see them and meet them in person, it's really so cool. I really feel privileged to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, you are in a privileged position and we benefit from that. So that's awesome. So thank you for what you do. When you think about resilience in your current job, what comes to mind for you there? How do you have to be resilient in your role?
So the role is really, it's multitasking. So I probably have about, I would say, 80 or 90 projects on the go in different stages.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's why I have the agency to really help keep me organized. We get together every week and look at a huge Excel sheet that tracks everything that we're doing. Of course, we have to document everything in a system. We have a lot of support from digital systems to help do this. So thank goodness that it's not, you know, pen on paper trying to do that, that we can really actually rely on a lot of digitalization. And this is something that Bayer has also really been in the lead to do as well, which I think is fantastic. I think resilience in something like this involves being flexible, always learning, troubleshooting. So you might recognize that what I did my PhD in is not what I'm working in.
Yep.
And I think the skills that you learn in a PhD, doing that, it's as I mentioned before, it's problem solving, it's troubleshooting, it's trying to figure out things, find solutions, bring solutions. And I think those skills carry on here. And I think having that skill set helps with resilience, because it doesn't really matter what the topic is. There's so many same themes, so many of the same themes that require those kind of skills.
Yeah.
And as I said, it's so many different projects. It's so many different author groups from different parts of the world, or all over the world. It's resilience is also having respect, I think, for people, for the different cultural aspects that come to the call. And those are things, some of those things, of course, it's not inherent. You have to learn them, and you also learn them by doing it. And I think being plopped down into a country where I didn't understand the language, it's a crash course in doing that as well. I wouldn't say that it's necessarily so easy, because I think what's also happened in COVID time is that being at home, we're working from home still, or
yes,
on and off and back in the home as well. I haven't seen that the workload has decreased at all. In fact, it's probably increased somewhat. And I think having resilience, if resilience means also carrying the load and the demand, it's also making sure that, and my cat helps with this, my husband helps with this, that I take breaks, that I try to separate work from life.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not separate life from work, work from life, because that's work is also your life. But if you know what I mean, to make sure I take the breaks to keep myself healthy and re-energized and things like that. Yeah.
So what do you do for that, to keep that energy going? You said that you love the outdoors. Does that help you?
That helps a lot. And we're so lucky in Switzerland to be able to hop on the train and go anywhere, to go to the top of the mountain for the weekend, to pop over to France, over to Germany. Switzerland is smack dab in the middle of Europe. So yeah, we're really spoiled that we can go quickly somewhere and get a different landscape, a different cuisine, hear a different language. It's really quite cool. What I also like to do, and this is still coming back to my previous training, Monday evening is painting. So I do that every Monday evening. And that's something that gets me completely out of my scientific mind, just to free my mind from that and jump into something completely different. That kind of re-energizes me. Yes. Sports. And I think what's different here as well is that I have a car, but don't need to rely on the car to go anywhere. Yeah. I cycle mostly everywhere or walk on foot, which is, I think we don't have big suburbs like we do in Canada, where you have to get in your car to go get some milk.
Yeah.
Every little neighborhood has a grocery store or two.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool, actually.
It's very impressive. It sounds lovely, actually. Surely you must sometimes think about that person that you were, that was doing the framing business, and think, what happened? Talk yeah. about a different path. And I think that's what life is all about. It's so unexpected.
It's so unexpected. And I think I never really had a clear idea where I was going. I was lucky enough to just sort of follow the ideas that, you know, came. And I thought, yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And even in choosing my career path where I ended up here, it was also a development over time where I started out working in a lab. My first job was working in a lab with skin cells. And then from there, it was getting more into the communication of science rather than being mm-hmm. at the lab, working in the lab and creating the data, to writing about it, translating science into a language we can understand was something that started fascinating me. And just having the freedom to follow that to a certain extent, it's probably maybe that I'm a little bit of a late bloomer to end up where I am. But it was a cool path to get there.
Very cool path, Marcella. And that obviously throughout your life, you're open to opportunities and possibilities. And I think that that's very impressive for one thing. It takes courage for another, but also I think the fact that you left the comfort of your home and went out into the world in a different way sort of adds to that. It's all of a piece, isn't it? I have three questions that I'd like to ask you. First of all, what is the best career advice that you've ever received?
I would say the best career advice was actually, in a funny way, it was discouraging me from taking a decision that I wanted to do. So let me put that in the right context. I wanted to quit the job I had, to take a year off, to just paint. So what had happened, I did my fine art degree, worked in that area for a couple of years, went to science. And when I started studying science, I found I couldn't paint or draw. It was somehow my brain was adjusting to science and I couldn't do both. And then I was in the science field for some years. And then I thought, I want to start to paint again. But I didn't feel I could do the both at the same time. So I decided, without having a plan, to take a year off just to paint. And the advice was, don't you dare do that. That will kill your career. Right? Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, kill my career. And I thought, no, I have to do it for me. In a way, it was not advice, positive advice, how to help me, but it made me realize I need to do this. I have to do this, even if it changes my career.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Did you do that?
Yes. I took a year. I rented a studio and got painting things and drawing and everything, because it's also a skill that you need to train back up again. So I needed to train again how to see, how to draw, how to paint. So I did that, and actually it led me in a new direction when I went back to look for work. I started working in a medical communication agency part-time, which allowed me to do both, to paint and to get ease back in to painting and science at the same time. So it actually was really, really good advice.
It was really good advice.
I guess I took it as a challenge, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes that's what we need. My second question, which sort of puts you on the spot, but is there a book that you've read that sort of influenced your style or your approach to life or work or whatever comes to mind as a book that meant something to you?
Yeah, actually, there's a book that I've read several times. I think when I first started reading it, I read it twice a year for several years. And it's The Shipping News by Annie Proulx. And that I started reading when I was already here in Switzerland. And that might have been something that really, it spoke to me because it's Canadian. She's a Canadian author. It's based heavily in Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. And I just loved it. I could imagine the vistas in my mind. It's about family. It's about people. It's about feeling at home and finding your place at home and in the world. And it was kind of my guide, I guess, and companion here in Switzerland. That was really, really a comfort for me, reading that book again and again.
Yeah. Okay. And my third and final question in this series is, what advice would you give your younger self?
I think to believe more in myself.
Hmm.
And in the sense of believing what I felt or what I feel or what my opinion is of value, and to be able to say that out loud. And that might be part of being a female in science. It might be part of, being in science.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very hierarchical environment sometimes. And I think when I look back, when I look at my stepdaughter who's 19, I also think you should have so much more faith in yourself and in mm-hmm. your opinions and in your views. And maybe that's just youth does not have that insight. Maybe it's just something that comes with age. And, you know, because I can see that when I say to her, you know, you're smart, you can do that. You've got the commitment, go for it. And I still see her sometimes wavering, and I recognize that in me. I would tell myself to, you know, have more faith in yourself. You can do it. Open your mouth and say it. That's, I think, the advice I would give. If I would take it, maybe not, but.
Yeah. I think that's everything I wanted to ask you, and I really appreciate the responses and so on, Marcella. Is there anything that you'd like to add or sort of leave us with today?
I think it's been so much fun, and it's really great to have to think back about some of those things. So I thank you for the questions and for the opportunity to chat. I would just say if anybody would like to ask more or think about coming over to Europe, I don't know, reach out or try it. Try it. I think it's worth it to give it a shot. It's been so, so great for me, so hard in many ways, but also just so rewarding. And I would do it again. Although I miss Canada so much.
I think you're always torn when you do something like what you've done.
Yeah, you're always going to have your soul in two places, I think.
And you just have to recognize that and appreciate, right?
Appreciate, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
And to our listeners and our viewers, thanks so much for joining Marcella and myself today to talk about these various complexities of life and making the big moves with career and education and so on. It's a tough journey for all of us, but boy, it sure is interesting and satisfying. So thanks for joining us, and please follow me on YouTube, watch there and listen wherever you get your podcasts, and until we meet again.